thanks for tuning in to a new episode of the Christian Manifesto podcast. I'm your host, Calvin Moore. During today's roundtable segment, a few of us sat down to discuss the question of, should Christians be involved in politics? Given the politically charged atmosphere of our country at the moment, we thought it'd make sense to talk about what everyone else is talking about. During our dual impression segment, J.F. Arnold and Nick Ahern discussed Propaganda's new album, Excellent. During our TCM Talkback segment, I got the chance to sit down and talk with Latifah Phillips and Dan Stockton of the group Page 116 to discuss their upcoming hymns album, Lullabies. And finally, during our Accomplice segment, Kara Tipton answers the question of a politically abused friend. Today's featured music comes from Propaganda and Page 116. Thanks for listening.
I'm not delusional. This most likely is your first experience with me. Greetings, my name is Propaganda. I wrote my first rap in 93, simply put, fire-baptized battle rapper who's heavily influenced by folk music and found creative freedom in poetry. Combo is strange, I know, but let this one bake your noodle. I'm the son of a Black Panther with a Mexican spouse and Caucasian best friends. And my writing tone, now, is not one that offers you a neat little bow to tie all your little problems up with. I learned enough to know that I don't know that much. I know God became a man to save us, and we still can't explain pyramids. I know ancient Mayans and Egyptian astronomers had a far greater understanding of outer space than we do. I know academia is so drunk on arrogance and racism that they'd rather credit these accomplishments to aliens than to admit that we are not the smartest civilization to ever live. I know I really love my wife, my daughter, and mangoes. For some reason, folks find it illogical to think that a perfectly designed universe screams of a designer. I know sarcasm is really the only time people tell the truth. I know chilaquiles and In-N-Out will be served in heaven. I know it's a much better decision to shut your mouth when you don't know what you're talking about than to validate what everybody already thinks of you. I know color theory.
And tonight we've got a roundtable discussion about politics. Figured it would be kind of cool to talk about politics, given that everybody is talking about politics right now. As a matter of fact, I think at the moment we're recording this, President Obama is giving his speech at the Democratic National Convention, if I'm not mistaken. So sorry to make you guys all miss that. We're all on the Skype line today, and we've got kind of a bigger roundtable than normal. We've got five people instead of three or four. But first on the line, we have Anthony Estes, MDiv student at the Candler School of Theology in Atlanta, Georgia. Say what's up, Anthony.
Greetings and salutations.
Close enough. And a good friend of mine, Wayne Beeson, who serves at DePaul University with InterVarsity Fellowship in Chicago, Illinois. Say hi, Wayne.
Hey, good to be here.
Also frequent Christian Manifesto contributor Kyle Kuykenfeld is on the line. Say hi, Kyle. And then last but not least, one of my favorite people to talk to is David Sidebotham, a graduate of Biola University. What's up, David?
Not much. Thanks for that.
No problem. So tonight, again, talking about politics, and kind of the question we want to bat around tonight is, should Christians be involved in politics? If no, why? If so, to what degree? And we're all on Skype, so sorry for any quality issues. And Anthony might have to hop off the line a little early tonight. So we're going to actually start off with you, Anthony. Should Christians be involved in politics? If no, why? And if so, to what degree?
I'm still on the on the fence about that. I think I can say yes, simply because, you know, the statement, Jesus is Lord, that's a political statement, and I think just using that as a premise, I think it's okay for Christians to be involved in politics. I do believe that there should be a limit to how much involvement Christians actually, you know, have within that arena. Do you want me to stop there?
Let's have other people weigh in. Wayne, what do you think?
I mean, I'm on the fence like Anthony as well, although if pushed, I would lean more the other way, saying that if the political statement, Jesus is Lord, is true, it's hard to have a dual allegiance, especially when it comes to serving a nation that relies on force to govern. So in a lot of ways, I would say allegiance to Jesus means a disconnect from, like, nationalism and that kind of politics.
Okay.
Kyle.
I kind of agree. Like, I go with a statement on nationalism. I try to be politically aware. I've been politically active in the past, but I'm more leaning towards not voting this election just because, obviously, the government denies kills people. It's murder, and murder obviously is a sin. So I guess I'm, as I get older, leaning towards political awareness, yes. Political involvement, no.
Okay. And David?
Well, I'm probably going to sound, I guess, by comparison, a little more extreme on account of I believe that Christians, not every Christian, but Christians as an abstract idea, ought to be involved in politics with no limitation as God leads them, on account of if you look at the lives of saints, and you get people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, if we weren't involved in politics, the atrocities which would be allowed to happen would be unimaginable. And when we're met with violence, meeting it with political force or war, I think are legitimate options for Christians who are called to do that to pursue.
Okay. I think for me, kind of going back to, we talked about multiculturalism recently, last week as a matter of fact, and one of the things we said was the church is inherently multicultural, and whether it should be multicultural on a local level was the whole thing that we discussed. But it's inherently multicultural, being that it's a church made up of nations. And I think that the message of the gospel is inherently political. And the problem with that is when you say that something is inherently political, people instantly want to think that it's in favor of their particular political outlook, their political party. So when I'm saying the gospel message is inherently political, I'm not saying it's inherently politically Republican or politically Democrat. I'm saying it's inherently political. It calls into question the way things are and the powers that be. So that in and of itself is political. When it comes to Christians being involved in the political process of their particular nation, not just America, obviously America is where all of us reside, but anywhere in the world, I do think that it is important for Christians to be involved in the political process. I think it's a means of serving your neighbor. I mean, obviously, you know, people look at politics and they think it's just a grab for power. But I think at bottom, the process of making laws, enacting laws, protecting people's rights, I think that those are inherently biblical things that we are called to do. Can it get out of hand? Can it be used badly? Absolutely. Can we do it wrong? Absolutely. But I do believe that Christians are called to be necessarily a part of the political process. So that's kind of where I land on that. Now, the question comes up, though, when it comes down to parties and affiliations and stuff like that, should the church be preaching one political view or another from the pulpit? I know, Anthony, you and I have had this discussion in the past, and again, I want you to kind of lead off on that one. Should the church be, or you guys can push back on what I said, or you guys can comment on what everybody else has said, but should the church be talking about politics from the pulpit?
Again, I'm kind of on the fence about that as well. I believe the Bible does have something to say about the issues, and it is our job as ministers of the gospel to, I think at some point, in some way, preach the gospel message that challenges or speaks truth to those issues. When we get into like endorsing a particular candidate or, you know, bad mouthing or, you know, anything like that, I think that that's irresponsible preaching from the pulpit, you know, especially within, I think that's a marker of contemporary African-American preaching, that some of our voices in those pulpits tend to be, you know, very strong political voices. So we have to be very careful about that. So preach the Bible, preach the truth as it relates to some of those issues, so we can inform our congregation, yes, but getting to the point where we're making actual endorsements for either side, I think that's dangerous, or it can be dangerous.
Okay.
I think I agree, Kyle, that it can be dangerous. It has to be done delicately. I agree that it's a dangerous thing, but I think I'd say that there's two modes of two things that I bear in mind when trying to judge it. The first one is that in a congregation which submits to some form of papal, traditional, or what's the word begins with E? I had it before I started talking. I forgot it.
Ecumenical?
Ecumenical authority. If you're in a church structure which has that authority, they have the right to, denominational right to make certain claims. Now, the claims which they could make, that's when you start getting into mutter. I would venture to say that once you're doing it in such a way, so you're treating another Christian as being less Christian because they disagree with you on the issue of political party, you're committing a sin. But at the same time, I heard an Orthodox bishop in California say that the Orthodox Church had a stance on abortion, and that voting for abortion was voting against the church, and scripturally, he said, against God. Now, agree or disagree, I respect that the church believed something was right enough to be open about it. There's certain points where politics crosses into morality. When that happens, I think we do need to be honest and forthright.
How about you, Kyle?
I definitely agree with what David said. I think the church and Christianity itself is very political. The message is very political, but there's a dangerous line when talking politics on the pulpit and endorsing someone, especially now everything is every party seems to be very quick to dehumanize the other person or the other opinion, and you don't have any real dialogue. It's find out what somebody believes by one statement and sum them up as, you know, oh, you got that from Fox News, you got that from NPR, your opinion isn't valid because you listen to Fox News or NPR. And it doesn't matter what media outlet somebody listens to or their opinion as much as it's how can I, as quickly as possible, discredit this person's viewpoint. And I think that is fundamentally very unchristian. And I think that's the danger with politics in the pulpit. And that's, I guess, my biggest concern when I hear a preacher say a political message is how would you reconcile politics and the current environment of politics where it is less about the other person in a matter of respect, but it's all about how the other person is wrong because of something.
Okay. For me, I think it's, again, yeah, that fine line. You know, how do you do it? How do you do it delicately? As a history major, I sometimes, you know, ask the question, should the church have ever made the deal with the government where, they became tax exempt and therefore they were kind of shackled in what they could say? Because once a moral matter or moral issue that the Bible does speak clearly on becomes politicized, well, then it's like, okay, well, now the church is talking politics. Case in point, you know, not to be that conservative Christian who brings up homosexuality or you know, abortion, conception, that kind of stuff. Those are hot political issues, but those are also things that the Bible does have something to say about. So if I come out and say something like, well, the Bible says X about homosexuality, or the Bible says X about life being important, well, if a political party disagrees with that, it's often claimed, okay, well, you're just being a conservative political person. I'm like, well, no, saying what Scripture says here. And, you know, people that goes for both sides of the party, because there are people who want to say, well, people who are pro-life are also pro-war. So you care about life in the womb, but not, you know, after you know, after it's born, you're okay with violence and those kinds of things. And I don't want to get into that. That's not what this is about. But it does, I do find it hard for the church to be able to adequately speak about moral matters, or I find the church tends to be shackled in moral matters and in cultural matters because they get politicized. And the moment they are politicized, we are not able to talk about them without someone claiming, oh, you're just being political. Oh, you just, like Kyle said, oh, you just got your position from Fox News. No, I got my position from the Bible. Oh, you just got your position from NPR or MSNBC. No, feeding the poor seems to be talked about pretty clearly in the Bible. And so I find that to be, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Kyle, that we dehumanize people for a particular political point of view. And it's really sad, especially when you see Christians dehumanizing one another. We got a letter for the accomplice segment about a person who's dealing with a friend who says they're not a Christian because they're a liberal. All their friends are conservative. They're a liberal. They go to the same church, worship the same God, serve the same neighbors, but, you know, they're not a Christian, or they're a lesser Christian because they vote a particular way, which I think is sad. Getting closer to the question, though, should the church talk about politics? Absolutely. Should it endorse specific political candidates? I think that is that's wrong. I think we should stick to Scripture, and if what you say in Scripture seems to align closer with a particular person, fine, vote for that person. But to go as far as to invite political candidates into your church and silently endorse them or to openly endorse them, I think that is a misplaced priority on the part of pastors and ministers in the church.
But I think that question kind of points to a bigger issue that I see, which is that a lot of times the church relies on political power from the government to address issues that it's better off addressing itself. And so I think the church should definitely be talking about political issues from the pulpit, but instead of relying immediately on who should we be voting for, what law should we be trying to get in place, things like that, we should begin with the question, what can we as citizens of an entirely different kingdom do to be a part of bringing that kingdom, God's heaven, to earth?
Okay.
Should I say more about that?
Yeah, a little more, because you're pretty much, we're going to take final thoughts right after you're finished talking.
All right, well, I'll make this my final thought then. Yes, so I think, and a lot, I think, what's up, a lot of hot button issues, we're quick to say, oh, homosexuality is illegal, or we should do this about abortion, or we should do this about welfare, or serving the poor, or human trafficking, or any number of things that, yes, I think we should vote based on where we feel God's heart is on those issues and what is the most loving thing to be a part of in the world. But when we, instead of actually personally, as individuals and the congregations, we stop actually being involved ourselves and just leave it up to, I'll vote and let the politicians take care of it, then we are, I think, betraying an allegiance to America that even supersedes our allegiance to the kingdom of God.
Okay, cool. Anthony, I know you got to get going, so why don't you give some final thoughts?
Well, one thing that I say all the time is that I believe that people on both sides of the aisle are trying to, live a life that embodies their sense of morals or whatever. But I believe that as Christians, we cannot legislate the hell out of people. They need to be converted. The answer to the world's dilemma is not Republican in the White House or Democrat in the White House, but it's Jesus in our hearts and living in an entirely different kingdom, as Wayne suggested. So if we do what we're supposed to do as Christians and be salt and light, that should compel the change in the world that we need to see.
Yeah, but Jesus doesn't have a birth certificate. And until I see that birth certificate, I'm not going to celebrate Christmas.
I think we can definitively say his dad was not American.
I think we can definitively say that he was not American.
Yeah.
How about you, Kyle?
I just think, like I said before, I struggle with the idea of nationalism. I have plenty of friends in the military. I joined the military for a brief period of time. I just wonder, with some of the politics, if we instead not necessarily ignore politics, but focus more on our communities. I think a lot of issues, whether it's pro-choice, pro-life, for gay marriage, against gay marriage, is best discussed and handled in within communities and from there onward. And I guess the more I observe politics, try to educate myself on history, the more I find myself realizing that the best politics are politics at dinner table, at your neighbor's house, at your church, at, you know, wherever, as opposed to watching somebody's speech at a convention or even necessarily voting. I struggle with I'm going to even vote this year, and it's not because I don't care about America. It's more that I think the politics are only going to get worse, and they can only get better from being active in the community.
Okay. And how about you, David?
I guess my final thought, I kind of got three of them. They go tandem with each other. I think it's some things said about how people sometimes can respond to other folks' political opinions. And I think it's important for us to remember, like you were saying, given how political the message of Christ is, how we're primarily sided with that party, if you will, that really neither Democrats nor Republicans or any earthly party can be our enemy. So treating people who toe those party lines like enemies doesn't make a lot of sense. And for those politicians or parties which do appear to side with us morally for the time, it's important to remember that they're siding with us. We're not siding with them. They should be endorsing us, in a sense, not endorsing them.
Okay.
And I guess that would be, that's my perspective on politics. It's not that I'm Democrat or Republican, but that if they agree with me, great. If they don't, well, then they're wrong.
Okay. I guess my final thought, and we'll close this out. Thanks so much for all your opinions, guys. Would love to get some discussion going on that, and we'll give people a way to do that in just a minute. But again, I want to reiterate that politics is a way to serve your neighbor. I remember reading a book a number of years ago when I first started the site by a woman by the name of Amy Black. She was a professor, or at that time she was an associate professor of political science at Wheaton College. In Chicago, Illinois, and I think South Barrington, Illinois area, but Wheaton, Illinois, right? Something like that. You'd know, Wayne. But
yeah, it's in the city of Wheaton.
Okay, I got the chance to sit down and talk with her, and she said that over and over and over again in that interview. Politics ultimately is a means of serving your neighbor. And that was at the beginning of this political experiment that we call, you know, the American Democratic Republic. That was kind of the view of those who went to work in Washington were going there not to seek power, but on behalf of other people. They were there to represent and serve other people. That's why we still have a representative government, at least in name. I hate to be cynical and just assume everyone is there for power. I know that a lot of good things get done by a lot of good people, both Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, whatever, who are trying their best to make this world a better place for their friends, their families, their children, and future Americans. And so I think that ultimately, if that's the point of view that any Christian has, Republican or Democrat, or Libertarian or Independent or whatever, if that's the view that someone has going into the political process or going into the voting booth or, you know, running for public office, or abstaining from it. I don't think everybody should be politically agnostic at the polls, but if someone like Kyle says, you know what, I don't want to really vote, I'm just going to serve in my neighborhood and help out my neighbor, I think that's just as viable. But ultimately, I think if people have that viewpoint going in, I want to do the best I can to serve this nation and serve my neighbors, I think that's great. I hope nobody's going in, and this is what we seem to do. Again, Kyle, going back to the whole demonizing people thing, I think a lot of people think that all Democrats go into the political process going, how can I undermine the American Republic? And I think all, a lot of people that I see talking about, you know, Republicans are saying, how can we get into the political process and take us back to the Pollyanna days? And so I just don't think people are getting into it for those reasons. I think a lot of people are getting into it to serve their neighbor. And if they are, I think God blesses that. Do we all agree on each other's stances? No. Do I vehemently disagree with a number of stances? Yes. But I still am not going to demonize anyone. And I think that's a stance that we all need to take, is to not demonize. We can disagree and work to do something different. But I think that ultimately this is about serving your neighbor, and that is something that Christ has called all of us to do, no matter what and no matter how hard. So those are my final thoughts. Loved all the thoughts tonight. What do you guys think who are listening? We've got a poll below that's asking that question. Should Christians be involved in the political process? Yes or no? To what degree? Should Christians preach politics from the pulpit? Is that an appropriate means or use of the pulpit in time to worship God? So please leave your opinions below. Leave your thoughts and comments. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening.
Hey everyone, welcome to Dual Impressions. My name is James Arnold. I've got Nick Ahern with me as always. Say propaganda, Nick.
Propaganda, Nick.
I don't know why I did that. Although we are here to talk about Propaganda's new album. It's called Excellent. Humble Beast Recordings is the label. It'll be available for free, I think, on September 25th, I believe is the release date. It's something like that. Something like that. But it's called Excellent, which is a bit of a presumptive title. He's trying to tell us how we should review it before we even review it. And we're going to talk about it. I know that if you follow both Nick and I on Twitter, you've already heard us talk about it a little bit because we got into it before recording this review. But I'm looking forward to talking about it. Nick, are you looking forward to talking about it?
Yeah. One of the few albums lit I'm actually excited to talk about.
All right, why don't you start us off? How much have you listened to Propaganda before this?
I heard them on Alert, their EP, I think it was Red.
Yeah,
that was the first I heard of them. And I like that track a lot, if I remember correctly. If I didn't then, I'd certainly like it a lot now. But yeah, I honestly, I listened to Don't Listen to Me, which is the first track, and it's...
He's backpedaling on that presumptive telling us it's excellent by just telling us not to listen to him.
Pretty much, and I was not feeling it for the first 2 minutes, and it's a two and a half minute track. And the first 2 minutes, I was like, okay, whatever. Then I listened, you know, the final 30 seconds hit, and I was like, oh, this went in a completely different direction. I thought it was going to be, you know, presumption to him obviously playing with that. And then I listened to it again 3 or 4 times. I was like, oh, this is good. Then I actually got really nervous. You want to know why?
Why?
Because as with most albums I listen to, the first couple tracks are the best tracks and the rest of the album is a train wreck.
Yeah, that often ends up happening.
But he follows it up with Excellence, which it made me happy. So it's weird for me to say that, but it made me happy. And I actually kept rating each song as I listened to it. And I'm looking through them now. 4-star, 5-star, 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 3-star. Yeah, I actually am kind of ashamed that it feels like I'm kind of sucking up to this
are
guy.
Are you gushing, Nick? I think you're gushing.
I'm starting to turn a little red right now. my ears are actually starting to burn a little, so I feel a little emotional right now.
This is impressive.
This is. I'll start with what I didn't like.
I was going to ask, what song got 3 stars?
Excellent analogy. The fifth track, which felt basically like an extended interlude.
The interlude?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was not feeling that at all. In fact, I was actually really annoyed because I'm like, everything else is so good. Then this is kind of like the one little hiccup, but it's a hiccup that's so strong it brings up a bunch of the stuff you ate with it, and so you're kind of like this kind of thing. Then it takes a little while for that to go away. Then after it goes away, it's like, that's right, we're back to Conqueror, Precious Puritans. Just forgive me for asking. I ain't got, like, that one hiccup aside, just, I was just like, why is this hiccup got to be here? Why is this hiccup got to be here?
Yeah, and at first listen, I mean, I was loving the album, I was digging it, and then I hit that interlude track, and I was like, what is happening? What's going on? We're now doing this, like, comedy teacher sketch thing that I'm not really sure why it's happening or what's happening, but okay, it's happening.
Yeah.
And then it cuts off really early. Like, it's a minute and a half long, but it cuts off mid-sentence. And I was like, maybe, like, the track was damaged in the review copy or something. But then you hear them laughing about it. So it's clear that that's just where they cut off the track.
Yeah.
But it was just funny because I don't know. How long is Be Present for you? Is that a minute 41, the last live performance poetry?
Let me see. Be Present? Yeah, 141.
Yeah, that one cuts off at the end, too. And I don't know if that's just a problem with the review copy or if there's something else going on there. So, other than that, though, yeah, I really dug this album. I've been listening to Propaganda for a couple years now. Most people first heard of him when they listened to Show Baraka's Lions and Liars. He did a poetry piece called Boys on there. And since then, he's put out another album called... now I can't remember what it's called. It's him and Odd Thomas doing the production. Art Ambidextrous, there we go. I can't believe I blanked on that. Art Ambidextrous came out 2 years ago, something like that. And then he was actually the first artist I ever interviewed, which was exciting. I got to interview he and Odd Thomas for that album. And then he even said on that album he was working on Excellent already. He'd already titled his next album. He was putting it out. And here it is. And I didn't know what to expect because his last album was all poetry set to beats. It wasn't rap in most senses of the word. It was just poems that he had taken and Odd Thomas had set it to beats, which was good, but it was not what I was looking for. Honestly, I didn't really want more of it. I love Propaganda's poetry, but a lot of what I love about it is the delivery and the live performance of it. I wanted a good, solid hip-hop album, and Humble Beast has proven, especially in the last year and a half, that they can really put out solid hip-hop. With Beautiful Eulogy, Alert, and Theory Has It, and they've got all sorts of stuff coming up. I was excited. And this album fit my expectations. I really liked it. And I'm really glad that you like it, Nick, because I'm never sure if you're going to like something.
Yeah, I'm an interesting fellow.
I know.
But no, it just, I had heard Alert, and so I'm coming in, okay, so it'll probably be aggressive, da da da. I was not expecting Woven Hand meets, you know, the lyrical acrobatics of, you know, Common with the depth of, like, Mos Def, you know, but through a Christian prism, you know, and that's, you know, compliments, because I love Mos Def and Common, not to say he's like those guys, but that's kind of, if I am to summarize, it's those kind of technique and, you know, just depth and just, I was just not expecting it. Precious Puritans, forgive me for asking. I ain't got an answer. I'm just sitting like song after song. It's like if you look at secular rap, you'll get maybe one track off an entire album that's like attempting to be deep, you know?
Yeah.
Like my favorite example is, I just had it. DMX has an album where it's typical DMX. I love DMX, but it's typical DMX. Then he does one song where it's literally a 3-minute prayer to God. It's the most like powerful thing you'll ever hear. Then you listen to the rest of the album, it's like he's talking about, you know, garden hose and women and female dogs and, you know, all this stuff. You're kind of like, where does this purr to God fit in?
Right.
You know? With this, I wasn't even aware I was listening to Christian rap until I actually started listening to it. And that's actually a compliment because I'm not pulled out of it to analyze it. You know, I was able to just kind of sit and accept it and like grow with it and roll with it. You know what I mean? I wasn't sitting here. It didn't put me on the defensive, you know, where like with, you know, some of the crazy stuff and a lot of the stuff we've listened in the past, instantly, you know, snap of the finger, I'm like, ah, sorry, Calvin, I caught myself there. Ah, shoot, you know. And it's like, oh, man, he's talking about this, and it pulls me out of it, you know. But with this, I'm not expecting the type of almost American Gothic, Americana, you know, kind of almost like No Country for Old Men kind of, you know, stuff, but with like, you know, hip hop and poetry. And it's like, these two things should not work. They shouldn't work, but they do. And they work really well.
Yeah.
So like every song is unique and different, but it builds off each other. And just, you know, lyrically, I've never heard anything as good as this. Like Church Clothes, move over. Like this is now, I think, my favorite Christian hip hop album.
Yeah,
and,
no.
It's such a unique album. Like even if I didn't like it, you know, let's say I hated the lyrics and, you know, all that stuff and it was corny, I still tell people to listen to it just because it's so unique. You know, it's like something this unique has to be heard, you know?
Yeah, no, this is definitely, it's definitely a solid album. It's also really heavy. You were touching on this a little bit ago, but those three tracks in a row, Precious Puritans, Forgive Me for Asking, and I Ain't Got an Answer.
Yeah.
Like, that's a solid 15 minutes of your life that you're just going to be in these deep, reflective moment of what do I do? What do I do with these problems, right?
Yeah.
Precious Puritans is aimed at pastors who are quoting slave owners. And, I mean, realistically, they're quoting people who, if they weren't slave owners, they weren't out defeating slave owners. And that's problematic in a, you know, present-day, multicultural, diverse church. And Forgive Me for Asking, he's critiquing Christianity in the first verse for people who pretend like they never have doubts, who pretend like they don't ever think about whether or not we're right or wrong. And the second verse is, like, straight at Muslims. Like, do you ever...
Yeah.
He says, you know, don't you ever, like, question whether or not the jihadists got it right? And that you're just, like, a lukewarm Muslim? Like, wouldn't that be awful? Wouldn't that be horrible? Don't tell me you don't ever question that. And he just continues on and on, and I Ain't Got an Answer is all about parenting. And
yeah.
It's him struggling, like, with what it means to be a parent this day and age when kids are, you know, going out and getting pregnant or getting people pregnant. Or Sho Baraka comes on and does a really powerful verse about being a parent to a child with autism.
Yeah.
And it's just heavy, track after track after track. But it wasn't... So a lot of time...
It wasn't monotonous.
No.
It wasn't like... the same type of thing. It was kind of this shifting perspective with each verse. You're hearing something new, but it's still deep and it
resonates.
You know?
And I didn't feel attacked. So a lot of time when I listen to really like heavy lyrical music, I feel like the artist is trying to lay these burdens on me. And this one, this album feels like Propaganda has sat in this stuff and wants to sit with people. He wants to walk through it with people. And that comes out in the music. That's the impression that I get. And so it feels weighty, but you don't feel alone. That doesn't happen a lot with quote-unquote depressing music, right? Like, it's just not that common. And so I really like this album. We've got excellent features, too, right? Like, Theory has its verse on Conquer is, like, so different from what I remember hearing him sound like on other stuff, but really, really good. The track featuring Beautiful Eulogy is ridiculous because it's Beautiful Eulogy, and it's awesome. They've got Lee Green on one of the tracks, and Sho Baraka, obviously. And so, I mean, this album, just front to back, is solid, with really the only misstep in my mind, other than the cutoff on the last track, which I'm going to attribute to getting an early copy, is the Excellent Analogy interlude.
Yeah.
Should we wrap this up? I mean, I'm running out of things to say, and I don't want to sound like I'm just praising this thing like crazy.
Yeah, my ears are turning really red, and I'm starting to get really highly annoyed and agitated right now for saying so many nice things.
All right,
let's wrap this up.
Why don't you wrap it up? Do your thing.
Aside from that, I'm going to be honest, that awful interlude, the album is, if I'm going to be general, it's a mix of Wovenhead. For those of you don't know, imagine Mumford & Sons filtered through Tool. If you don't know who Tool is, go listen to Tool. It's just heavy. It's existential. It's progressive. It's like prog rock. But anyway, imagine that filtered through like church clothes, and you have all this stuff kind of going on. But essentially, what you at the end of it, you have this sheet of awesome cookies that assembled from amazing ingredients. You know, standouts. I mean, almost every song except the interlude is a standout, and that, to its credit, does not weigh the album down. It's deep. It's uncompromising, but it's sensitive. It's a very sensitive outlook, and it's like, example, something like Korn, or you know, most of the, you know, a lot of other artists, where it literally is them vomiting on the audience, going, "Yeah, okay, you can deal with it. Go deal with that." Whereas with Propaganda, it's not just a regurgitation of, you know, sin or a burden or pain or suffering. It's literally it feels like a conversation, and most artists cannot achieve that, and he achieves this perfectly. So I can't give you any track that's outstanding because they're all outstanding. But if I have to, gun to my temple, just go with the title track, Excellent. I'm going to give this 4 stars out of 5 because that interlude does really bother me. And that really bothers me. It's like getting a sundae with a piece of gravel on top instead of a cherry. You know, it's like once you flip that off, you have a great sundae, but you still had a piece of gravel on your sundae. So it just gets 4 out of 5 from me, but it's honestly one of the best Christian like rap albums, or even just rap albums in general, that I've heard in years. So take that as a good thing. So awesome. Propaganda, thumbs up. If you can't see it, my thumb is up. So
he can't see it, Nick. This is radio.
I don't know that. Maybe he's looking. That's, and he can maybe see it. I don't know.
Horrifyingly creepy. yeah, there's not a lot I can say to add to that. This album lives up to its name. I joked about Propaganda sort of, you know, trying to tell us how to rate the album by calling it excellent, but it's aptly labeled. This is the right name for this album. The features are excellent. The technical aspect of the album is really good. The production throughout is solid. You're not gonna find basically any missteps on this album except for the interlude. The interlude doesn't hold nearly as much sway on me as it does Nick. This album is nearly perfect, but I am going to drop it down a 1/4 of a star. So I'm going to give it a 4.75, which is one of the highest ratings I've ever given on Dual Impressions. And I think he deserves it. This is solid. Yeah. This is great stuff. Do we need to do the math? I don't even know how to do math anymore.
I don't know how to do math.
Where,
I don't care.
Where are you, calculator? Because I am that way. 4.75. And what did you give it, a 4?
4, yeah.
All right. So 4.37, we'll go to 4.4. That's easier. We'll round.
Right.
4.4, which is really good.
Yeah, that's really good.
That's right up there with guys like Swoop and Beautiful Eulogy and Bad Meets Evil as far as ratings we've given.
Yeah, so that's really kind of cool.
Yeah, that is impressive. Well done, Propaganda, on your recent album, Excellent. The album's going to be free, by the way. If you've listened to this whole thing, you still don't know who the guys at Humble Beast Records are, they give away all their music for free. Go to humblebeast.com, snag it. This thing will be out, I believe, September 25th. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been Dual Impressions. My name is James. Nick is here, and I'm not going to give him anything to say. So if he wants to say something, he has to come up with it himself. And he doesn't, so we're just going to say goodbye. Or I'm going to say goodbye. Alone.
Goodbye.
Nick can barely speak alone. Alright, goodbye everyone. And just last week he baptized the guy that put the hit out. My cousin Aaron shooting kites, the arm curling by how he hates his life, and tell me a little more about Christ. Oh, the deep love. Spread his home from shore to shore and sea to sea. Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. So yeah.
everybody. Thanks for tuning in to our interview segment of the show. Today, I am sitting down with members of the group Page 116, and I'm speaking with Latifa Phillips and Dan Stockton of the group. There's three members in the group, but we've got two on the line today. Thanks so much to both of you for being on the line with us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
This is great.
Now, either one of you can answer this, or both of you can answer this question, but Page 116 is kind of a new group for me. I got contacted by your publicist saying, hey, you know, this is who we are. We'd love to have our band featured on your site. And so I got this new hymns album, this lullabies album, and then come to find out that you have several albums before that, which made me kind of angry because I like to be in on the ground floor for bands. And I was like, they have all this good music, so I need to go back. I feel like I don't know them yet. So this is an introduction to me, but also probably going to be an introduction for a lot of our listeners. So either one of you can hop in on this question, but tell us a little bit about the story of Page 116. How did you guys get your start?
Well, we actually started as another band called The Autumn Film, which still exists. We still play. The Autumn Film's all original music. It's more just like indie pop rock. But we all had a deep passion for hymns and that music. And so we decided, instead of just doing it under the moniker of The Autumn Film, that it felt like such a different project in contrast to The Autumn Film, that we wanted to make it its own project as well. So we came up with another band name, even though it's all the same members. And we are about 2 years in with The Autumn Film, so that would have been 3 or 4 years ago. And we all met through mutual friends, and just, I mean, literally within the same week, we met and started the band and started playing, and that was almost 7 years ago. Yeah, so that's kind of how we got our start. We just all had like a deep passion and love for these songs, but we all kind of wanted to see the music kind of take different shape. And so that was kind of the idea.
All right, I'll shoot this question to Dan then. So the name is Page CXVI, which in Roman numerals is 116, which, you know, for those of you who are listening before we started recording, I thought it was 16 because I didn't, you know, I don't know my Roman numerals very well. But, well, I should have known with the C. I know XVI is 16, so I don't know why I didn't figure that out. But what is, this question's for you, Dan, what's in the name Page 116?
Like Tifa said, we're all really big fans of hymns, and we're all also really big fans of C.S. Lewis. So in the Chronicles of Narnia, the first book chronologically called The Magician's Nephew, page 116 is a scene where Aslan is seeing Narnia into creation. And so we just love that imagery of God calling creation into being through melody. And we figured it was a really apt name for the project that we were thinking of. So we went ahead and made it extra confusing and mysterious and went with the Roman numeral.
So that would explain, I guess, I'm looking on my computer right now at the symbol for your group, which is a lion. Guessing that represents Aslan.
That
you know it.
Okay. Wait, does it represent Aslan or does it represent Liam Neeson?
They're both equally awesome.
Well, since Liam Neeson was Aslan in my book, but whatever. So you guys have already released 4 hymns albums before the release of the Lullaby Hymns album. So why an album of lullabies? Why not another album of just hymns? Or why hymns in the form of lullabies, I guess?
Well, actually, none of us have kids of our own yet. We're all married.
Okay.
I mean, not to each other. Well, I'm actually married to Reed, who's in the band, but Dan's not married to us. So, I had my first niece was born about 3 years ago. And when she was born, I went to go visit my sister, and she was listening to all this quote-unquote lullaby music in the car. And I just felt like we can do better for my niece. Like, we can make something where the content is really rich and the music's beautiful, but also that is good for adults to listen to as well. Because we also know that parents probably re-listen to these same CDs for their kids over and over and over again. And so I really wanted to focus on songs, hymns in particular, that focused on rest, peace, and God's provision for us. Because that just felt like a good something that's soothing and a good reminder, not just for little ones, but for their parents too. And so the idea kind of started there, and then all three of us really latched onto it. And, you know, we just love hymns, so we just said, why don't we take a new challenge and make hymns in the form of a lullaby so that, you know, little ones can fall asleep listening to really powerful truths about who God is.
That's really now it's interesting. I'm now looking at the cover of the Hymns Lullaby album, and I'm noticing that the symbol is a baby lion.
Mm-hmm, it's a little cub.
That's so cute. Okay, so talk about some of the songs on this project. Obviously, again, you've already released four albums of hymns. How did you approach these hymns differently? Because, I mean, not everybody's in the market of making lullabies. Not everybody knows how to go about making lullabies. How did you approach this project differently than the projects that you've done in the past?
The way we started – oh, sorry.
No, Dan, you go
first. I'm direct the questions at both of you, so Dan, go first.
Yeah, the way we started was kind of gathering songs that we thought focused on rest and peace, just really calming, soothing songs that would obviously just really fit in naturally to a lullaby's idea. And then one way that stood out to me that we just approached it differently was I played drums on all the albums, and this one I am not playing drums at all. I'm playing some keys and some other melodic type of instruments, which was really fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. We knew that we couldn't have huge drum beats, which is something that we usually actually lean on a lot because Dan's such a wonderful drummer. And so we wanted to move the songs melodically with like different rhythms and melodies with different instruments and obviously percussive instruments. So that definitely was a different experience for us. And the other thing I think just for me, just thinking about arranging the songs. We didn't want this. We generally also get like very dramatic in our music. So we have a lot of like rises and falls, you know, crescendos and such. And we wanted these songs to be a little more constant, a little more understated and subtle. And like one of the songs we had, you know, Dan actually play like a tom that felt more like a heartbeat, you know, underneath the song, which kind of carries the song through just a really slow, calming heartbeat. And so it was really just a really different approach than we normally do when we just looked at how we want to play our instruments and how we want the songs to rise and fall.
Okay. Now, you guys have also spent time collaborating and touring with Derek Webb. And if I'm not mistaken, for those of you who are listening, if you don't know who Derek Webb is, he's a prolific songwriter, been part of Caveman's Call over the years, has released a number of solo albums and instrumental albums. Fantastic artist in his own right. But you guys have toured with him, and I believe that he, I guess, remixed some of your music. How did that come about, and what's that relationship like, especially touring? You're doing hymns, and he's doing a number of different styles of music. What's that been like being on the road with him?
We actually haven't gone out yet. We leave Tuesday.
Oh, okay. So you don't know yet. All right.
I imagine it's going to be really fun. So...
yeah, we okay, actually well, have we have four hymns albums, and then the fifth one, our fifth release, is the re-hymns that Derek remixed.
Okay, so will you guys be on, I guess either one of you can answer this question, will you guys kind of be on stage as a backup band, or are you guys going to be doing your own thing on tour with him?
We'll
go
be
ahead,
opening,
Dan.
And then we'll back him up.
Okay, that's really cool. Okay, so this album is in the can. This album is done. After your touring, what's the life cycle like for you guys as a band? Will you continue to make hymns while you're on the road? Or are you just kind of done with, not really songwriting. I guess it's more song arranging more than anything else. While you guys are out on the road, are you guys planning your next album? Or are you just kind of done and going to focus on being on the road at this point?
Lullabies releases in November, so we actually haven't released it yet. So that's definitely something to look forward to. But I just finished doing about five brand new songs, new hymns, and three in kind of like an alt country style, and another one in kind of like an electric style, two more. And those are going to be incentives for people to start spreading the word about us. And so that campaign is actually happening next month. So that's five brand new, totally brand new songs that people can access. While we're on the road, we're just going to be focused on touring. But when we come home, we're always writing and creating new music.
Okay. I have two more questions. And I want Dan to answer first, and then I want you to answer next, Tifa. This is okay. The same question. One of the things, you know, when you're doing this kind of thing, when you're reviewing music all the time like I'm doing, we get tons of different styles of music come across our desk. And so it's pretty easy to review pop music and hip-hop music and country music and all those kinds of things. But when worship music comes across our desk, nobody on my staff wants to touch it. Because it's like, if you say anything bad about worship music, it's like kicking a puppy or punching a baby. And you don't want to do either of those things in succession. Unless you're Will Ferrell in The Campaign, which is hilarious. Terrible, but hilarious. Either way, worship music is really hard for us to review, but one of the things that I have noticed over the years is a lot of worship music tends to sound the same. There are those popular guys who are out there, like, you know, David Crowder, who's now done, but David Crowder, Chris Tomlin, and everybody wanted to sound like them. Now Gunger has come out, and everybody's trying to sound like Gunger. And, you know, you've got the Ren Collective Experiment, people are trying to sound like them also. But one of the things that I find conspicuously missing from the current worship movement is a reliance on hymns, kind of going backwards to move forward, so to speak. Because I find stuff to be beautiful in regards to hymns. I think Passion did a hymns album a number of years ago, and that to this day is one of my favorite albums by them. What are your thoughts on the current state of worship music, and what do you believe your place is within it?
I would say our current place in it is just pursuing truth and sticking to just that beautiful heritage that hymns brings. I think if we branch out and write more albums that are explicitly non-hymn, I think something that is really important to all of us as songwriters and just artists is that what we're doing is meaningful and deep and more like in a way that's more than like, I guess, transitory. I don't know what the word is, but
okay.
Does that make sense? I think like a lot of worship music today isn't, I don't feel like as deep and meaningful and connected to the history of the church or anything like that. I think it's more like kind of what's going on today, and it might not matter tomorrow. And so something that's important for us is just to just that rich history that ties us to our roots.
Okay. And how about you, Tifa?
As far as like the current status of worship, I might get in trouble for saying this, but I actually don't really listen to any quote unquote worship music. and it's not because that I like disapprove or dislike. I mean, I love Robbie C. I've definitely loved his records and those kinds of things, but I really listen to lots of different artists like Sigur Rós and Radiohead and Pedro and Death Cab and Imogen and Patti Griffin. And I really love the standards. So I find a lot of their music actually, reminiscent of what I think worship is a lot of times for me. And so I think when I think about our place, I think that we just follow our convictions, and I think we all felt really convicted to really work on these songs and pour ourselves as artists into these songs, just so they wouldn't get lost. Like, you know, we definitely play in a lot of places where people are familiar with these songs, but I would say we play equally as much with people who have never even heard these songs. People that didn't either grow up going to church, or they grew up going to a kind of church that just only sang contemporary songs. And so it's really fun to just kind of make hymns known again. And it's a really wonderful thing to spend your time doing, I think, because we've seen these songs kind of unify, I guess, in the sense that we play every different kind of denomination of church. And there's, you know, really older people that love these songs. And then we have people that tell us, you know, they have 2-year-olds that go to bed, you know, listening to our hymns, like 1 through 4. And so I love the idea of like the cross-generational, cross-denominational songs that everyone can really get into and enjoy and worship, you know, God together with. And granted, like, you can't make everybody happy, and that's not our goal. Our goal is just to follow our convictions and where we believe God's leading us as artists to restore and renew these songs in a way. Not that there's anything wrong with the old versions, but just to breathe kind of different life into them so a different kind of people can appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that was the idea, too, behind having Derek remix our hymns, because he would interpret them in a totally new way that would reach a whole different kind of person, you know? And the whole intent is just about keeping these songs alive. So, because they speak about, ultimately, who gives us life. So,
okay.
That's what I would say.
Oh, all right. So, final question for the both of you. I guess actually either one of you can answer this question, and you can fight over it if you want. Again, you guys are kind of new to me, so I'm guessing that you're going to be new to a lot of our listeners. Or if you are a listener and you've heard of them and you haven't told me about them, I'm mad at you officially. but where can people find out more about your group and what you're doing?
You can go to page116.com or pagecxvi.com, and then we're on Twitter, Facebook. I don't think our MySpace profile is active anymore, but just anywhere that the internet is, we are.
Yeah.
Just search for our name.
And we have a current free download, so people can get 9 free songs. It's called B-Sides if they sign up on our email list. So we just need your email, and you get 9 free songs, and it kind of introduces you to, like, a couple songs off each record.
Yeah,
okay,
that's hdxvi.com/share.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I will definitely be giving you my email tonight. And,
thank you.
I will definitely tweet that out so that our listeners can check that out also. But thank you so much, Tifa, Latifa Phillips, and Dan Stockton for hopping on the line and just kind of sharing with us a little bit about who you guys are and your music. I love what you're doing, and I wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you.
So much,
you
Calvin.
Too. Yeah.
All right. You guys have a good night.
You
okay,
too.
You too.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning into another episode of the Christian Manifesto podcast. You have reached our accomplice segment, and I am on the line with the accomplice, Kara Tipton. Thanks so much for joining us, Kara.
Thanks for having me.
And this week on the podcast, we've talked quite a bit about politics already in the roundtable, and it just kind of interesting that we got a question about politics, and it seems kind of apropos given the heated political season we are in here in America. And for those of you who are listening around the world, I'm sorry, I don't know what's going on in your particular countries, but I'm an American, so of course I don't know what's going on in your countries because we're ignorant over here. So either way, it's funny when I talk to people like, Africa? Africa's not a country? No, Africa's a continent. Africa's a continent. But anyway, we got a question from a conflicted Christian voter. And so here's the letter that comes out of the grab bag here. Dear accomplice, my friends and I disagree strongly on politics. They're more conservative and I'm more liberal. We're all passionate about our beliefs, but it's getting to the point where they're even questioning my faith. We go to the same church, worship the same God, and serve the same neighbors, but my faith is ridiculed as lesser because I vote differently. I don't want to give up on my friendships, but I'm also not very sure that they're sustainable given our very different views on very important matters. The fact that I'm viewed as a lesser Christian doesn't help much either. What should I do? A conflicted Christian voter.
Yeah, this is a good question. I think it's something a lot of people think about. I've heard lots of feedback from people who get, even in their Sunday morning church services, they get some kind of political message saying, you know, if you're a Christian, you should vote this way or that way. And it's confusing, especially if you disagree with that. You think, am I a bad Christian if I have a different view on that subject? And I think that probably where that question needs to start with anything politics related is just what is our worldview as Christians? Is our worldview democratic? Is it as conservative people? Is there a political party for particular Christians? I think probably not. I think where we need to come at all things in our life, I think our worldview needs to be Christ. If we can agree that we all have the same worldview of Christ and belonging to the kingdom of Christ, we'll have this common ground, which is just important for any kind of relationship, particularly with our brothers and sisters. And so we start there. You're still going to have lots of different ways to accomplish that worldview, or that worldview is going to manifest itself. And what it makes me think of is the school I went to one time, they had a panel discussion during chapel, and they had two of our very well-respected professors up front. One was a known pacifist, and one was getting ready to deploy to Iraq as a soldier. And they were talking about how their faith compelled them to make those decisions. The pacifist just really very strongly believed that because he was an imitator of Christ, and Christ said, if someone strikes you, you turn them the other cheek and let them strike that as well, that it was important to him to sit in the midst of whatever people were going to throw at him and just be calm and be passive. And the other professor, obviously a soldier, he believed that it was important for him to go to Iraq and to defend those who couldn't defend themselves and to stand for injustice. And both these men, like, I respect them. They both love Christ. And honestly, I don't think either of them is wrong. I think they're just called to different action based on their faith, on their worldview. I think we need people that are passive. We need people like the Martin Luther Kings of the world who can go into a violent situation and be peaceful and let that show people that Christians are different than what the world is. I think we also need people that are fighters. We need people that are going to go in and overturn tables or stand up for those who are being persecuted. Christ did that as well, and I think that we need those people in the world too. And I think what it comes down to is, like Paul says at the end of Romans, don't judge another master's servant, because we all serve the same God, and he calls us all the different things. We're all different parts of the body, and it would be wrong for us to say that because I am moved in a certain direction politically, that somehow is telling to what my heart believes about Christ. I think also that, you know, I'm sure most of us have heard the story in Samuel where the people are demanding a king, and God's like, you don't want a king. And he's like, no, we want a king. We all want a king. And so he gives them, you know, he sets up this government. It wasn't God that invented government. It was man. They wanted it. And of course, like anything that man thinks they want, it brings some kind of conflict into the world.
Right.
but it doesn't mean that government can't be used for good. Everything that God creates can be used for good. Obviously, the government does a lot of good things to help people. It definitely helps keep peace in certain areas. It helps give people things that they might not otherwise have. It gives people a voice. And I think that government can be a really great tool for Christians in particular to learn from each other. And if we have open spirits and open hearts, we can talk to each other about our different views in politics and learn. Or if we don't change our minds, we at least can understand where someone's coming from because we love them and respect them. So I think, I mean, that answers the political portion of the question. And I think after reading through that, I realized there was also another question kind of buried in there. How do I get along with people who require me to agree with them, which I think goes beyond politics, but it's definitely what,
and I was like,
what this,
like the core of friendship. They're like belittling my faith and saying that I'm not as good as them in a way because I think differently. Is that really friendship? That seems to be kind of like at the bottom of this question here.
It is. And I think it's hard to answer because, I mean, you can only change you. I mean, you can believe at your core that your worldview is Christ and you're entitled to your own opinion and you can have these conversations and still be friends, but you can't control somebody else. And if they're just determined to be angry and not talk to you and not treat you like you're an equal unless you agree with them, then you're going to have trouble having a friendship with them, having a relationship with them. So I think there are two options, I guess, you have to approach that kind of situation. And particularly, I'm talking about this political situation. I think you have the way that I'm more inclined to do because I'm non-confrontational is to kind of back away from those people because it makes it easier to love them, just to kind of avoid any political topics or any hot button issues at all that might bring up me having to stand up for what I believe in. I would kind of back away, just, you know, love them from afar, talk about soccer or talk about something that isn't threatening to them at all and just kind of keep it lighthearted, kind of superficial, you know, love them that way. And I think that's okay, honestly. I don't think you have to be best friends with everybody at your church, especially if, you know, they're going to kind of attack you because of your political stances. I think the other option is just to...
That's because you're just a liberal hippie. That's because you're a liberal hippie.
Right, sure. We just love each other. Well, we should love each other. But I think that the second option, it's not any less loving, but it is a little bit more confrontational, which is okay. Jesus is confrontational sometimes too, actually a lot of the time. And I think the other option is just to kind of toughen up a little bit, to not be scared about getting in those hard conversations, being secure in the fact that, you know, even if someone else thinks that you have a lesser faith, you know that you don't. To not be swayed so much by what people think about you or be offended by that, but to kind of just look at them like, I don't want to say it like a weaker Christian, but, you know, it's a weaker mindset to say if somebody disagrees with me, then they're a weaker Christian than I am. So I think just kind of realizing that you both love Christ, it's okay to even discuss that up front. Like, hey, I really enjoy politics, and obviously you do too. We disagree on a lot of things about it, but I really wanted to talk to you about it because I think we can learn from each other, and at the very least, we can learn to respect each other's decisions if we can talk about it. So, you know, I'm not afraid to get in debates with you. I'm not afraid to talk about these hard things as long as we can both agree that at the end of the day, we're brothers and sisters in Christ. Like, that's our core of who we are. And I think if you are able to establish those ground rules in that relationship, you'll be able to continue getting into political debates, which some people really enjoy, but do it in a loving Christian way.
And I think that's key to any good dialogue, and we discuss that in our panel about politics. But I also like the fact that you hit on the fact that you don't have to be friends with everyone, that you can back off. I mean, some people honestly don't want anyone around them other than people who think like they do. Some people want to stay in those relationships to kind of be the ministry to those people, but sometimes it's like casting your pearls before swine.
Sure.
And, you know, you don't have to be friends with everyone. And I think that's sometimes what's at bottom behind people sticking in relationships longer than they need to, any relationship, not even just one based on politics. Just a lot of people stay longer than they should because, well, you know, I want this person to like me, or I need to be a ministry to this person in some way, shape, or form, but sometimes that's not for you to do. So I like the fact that you kind of gave people the freedom to stay or to go. I think that people need to be able to hear those kinds of things. I think that's very, very wise counsel.
Well, good. I think it's important just to kind of to realize that, to not ever feel stuck in a relationship. Like, sometimes there are people that make you feel like you're bashing your head against a wall, and I don't think that's okay either. I mean, definitely just pray about it, determine what's going to work out in the situation, and make the best choice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, always a pleasure to hop on the line with the accomplice, a.k.a. Kara Tipton. Thanks so much for hopping on the line and answering the question of one of our readers or listeners. I'm never sure if people are just reading and listening, or just reading or just listening. So whatever you're doing out there, people, thanks for doing it. Thanks again, Kara, for hopping on the line with us. And if you guys have questions out there, if you have a question that you'd like Kara to answer on the Accomplice segment, during the Accomplice segment of our show, please email us at theaccomplice@thechristianmanifesto.com. And Kara will sift through those letters and pick which one she's going to answer each week. And again, thanks so much. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you guys later.